Totally Football Show. Today, big midweek headlines. Liverpool visit Salzburg and destroy the rebel base with a wonder strike from Salah. Can I call him an ex-winger? Chelsea have a little win that could prove very big. And no more banter as Atalanta prove there's no such thing as a free lunch. We round up all the drama and look ahead to the weekend. Arsenal, Man City and Liverpool, Watford and so much more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Yes, listener, never mind the ballots. Here's the Totally Football Show, also featuring hordes of people out in all conditions, putting crosses in boxes, hoping to stay in Europe, much like, you know, Champions League match day six anyway. And still looking good after two nights doing the goal show. James Horncastle.
Hi, James.
Still looking good after two nights watching the goal show, Duncan Alexander.
Hi, James.
And still looking good. Actually, this gets a bit awkward now. But anyway, Emma Saunders. Lovely to have you here from
Hi,
the
James.
Hi to you. Five Live Football Daily Podcast. Emma, did you enjoy the midweek action?
Haven't seen an awful lot of it because I've not been very well.
Wow,
James.
Then this will all be new to you.
I'm in the right place, aren't I?
Yeah. Boy, what are we going to tell you about first? It was the finale of the group stage of the Champions League. Eight places, half of the slots in the last 16 still to be settled. Most of the drama came on Tuesday with Liverpool through, Chelsea through, Dortmund and Lyon and Napoli too. Big shocks elsewhere. Particularly in Chelsea's group, where Ajax started off the day in top spot and ended up in the Europa League.
Yeah. Did you see Frankie de Jong, who's obviously playing for Barcelona at Inter, looking at the scoreboard, seeing what his old mates had done and seeing that they'd gone out?
Yeah.
Poor Frankie.
Poor Frankie. Well, it's a big shame for them, but terrific news for Chelsea and Valencia. Valencia, who earned their spot in the last 16 with a victory away there at the Amsterdam Arena. Ajax will be one of the big names in the Europa League, I imagine, when that rolls around. Chelsea looking a little bit nervous in the finale of that game at home to Lille.
Well, Ajax going out means, and Valencia going through with the other results that happened this week, means that we, for the first time ever, the last 16 is made up only of teams from Germany, England, France, Spain and Italy.
Yes.
The big five. So that caused a bit of consternation because I think you need an underdog in there at some point. I mean, Ajax lit up the competition last year.
Right. Maybe we've got an underdog because this... Yep, that's the sound there of James Horncastle celebrating not having to buy lunch for the Totally Football Show crew and all listeners.
I'd happily take Atalanta out for lunch.
So there you go.
I'll extend the offer. I mean, it'll cost me a lot more money.
Right.
22 players, but...
The unfancy side from Bergamo, bottom of their table, bottom of the table in their group at the start of Wednesday's action, a team who had lost all of their first three games by a margin of 11 goals to 2. Who only had 1 point after four matches, going through to the last 16. Duncan.
Yeah, it's the first time a team has ever lost their first three games and gone through to the knockout round. Some people remembered that Newcastle did it, but that was in the less pleasant era of the two group stage Champions League. Which
You're
always...
not nostalgic for that, Duncan.
I mean, did anyone finish the first group stage and go, wow, I'm ready for another group stage? I didn't, certainly. So, I mean, it's amazing, but, you know, every year you get a team. I remember City going out with a really high points total 1 year. You know, you had Ajax going out conceding 6 goals, Tottenham going through having let in 14. So with a 6-game group, there's a lot of possibility for variation and randomness. And
that said, Atalanta looked dead and buried. James, you maintained they'd be able to do it. You even, as I mentioned, bet lunch with us and all our listeners. We scoffed, but the sad
thing is
we won't get to scoff.
No, I think, look, the reason why I believed in this team is because they are very good. And when the draw happened, I looked at that group and I just thought, yes, City will run away with it. But Atalanta, who have a habit of going to the big teams in Italy and upsetting them and playing a really aggressive brand of football, I just thought they could do it. And I think in some respects, this might sound crazy, it helped them knowing that they had nothing to lose from match day 3 onwards. And that second half against City at San Siro was a real turning point for them. Even though they couldn't take advantage of Kyle Walker being in goal for the final 10 minutes, there was a sense that they'd played well enough to believe that when they came against Dinamo Zagreb and they came up against Shakhtar, they could do it. And boy, they did. And the celebrations in Bergamo during the game and then at the airport at 2 a.m., it's just the kind of football story that brings us, you have a spontaneous smile on your face.
Because they're a little club that does things the right way. They're one or two chequered moments in their past, and if you're curious about those, there is a Golazzo special all about the boys from Bergamo. But in terms of what they're going to offer in the last 16, what kind of opposition do you think they represent?
I think it's going to be really interesting to see who they get on Monday in the draw. The issue that they faced in the first three games was that they're quite an interesting side in that they play man-to-man across the pitch. And in Serie A, it's fine because only the top teams have really good dribblers. And even then, they only maybe have one who can actually get past these kind of defenders. In Champions League, more or less everyone, yeah, Shakhtar has 18 Brazilians who can capable of do that. City have, you know, the likes of Sterling, De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva and everybody else. But they seem to find a coping mechanism. And I think now, again, they're just going to go into the round of 16 believing that anything's possible. They've got absolutely nothing to lose. They're playing not just with house money. They've already paid off their wage bill from getting through into the knockout stages. So I think that actually makes them quite a dangerous proposition to don't underestimate them, as I never did.
Indeed, so. I mean, in terms of scale, for perspective, they're, would you say about the same size as Watford? Maybe a little bit smaller? Smaller budget, certainly.
Oh, yeah, most definitely a smaller budget than Watford. Just by dint of geography. And I mean, Duncan referenced earlier the consternation about the fact that the only teams in the knockout stages are from Europe's top five leagues. But by this, using the same logic of economic stratification, Atalanta should be locked out of their own top four in Serie A because that wage bill that we've mentioned is mid-table in Serie A. It's not fifth or sixth and there's just been some kind of random happening that's allowed them to get in.
Right.
They've massively punched above their weight consistently over, 4 years now, where the first team was broken up and picked off and all the best players went away. And they've rebuilt and gone again. They stuck with the team this year that got them into the Champions League. And again, it wasn't like they just finished fourth. They finished third last year. So it's quite remarkable stuff, really. And Gasperini, the coach, already made an honorary citizen of Bergamo. I mean, the statue's next, James. The statue's next.
And of course, next to him on the plinth, you'd hope would be, and it would take a little bit less metal as well, would be Papu Gomez, the diminutive genius who may well, research suggests, have invented the floss dance, but certainly was absolutely key in their resurgence in the Champions League. I don't know if he actually did, Duncan.
He did. I'm going to go with that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'll bet you lunch.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Meanwhile, other Champions League news from the other end of Italy saw Napoli going through to the last 16 with a 4-0 win over Genk. And, as you might expect, firing the manager straight afterwards. Duncan, you have some stats on related managerial...
Well, just that it was quite a weird Champions League this year for managers. So you had Ancelotti in Napoli get through, he gets a sack. You had Bayern recording the best ever group by anyone. 6 wins out of 6, the biggest goal difference. You know, changed their manager halfway through. Tottenham got through, they changed their manager halfway through, even lost 7-2. You had Frank Lampard, the first English manager to get through a group stage, having managed all the games since Harry Redknapp in 2010-11. So
Genk,
yeah. Yeah, I mean...
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't forget Genk. But yeah, it was quite a, you know, in a group stage that maybe didn't have some of the big players playing as well as they have done, say your Cristiano Ronaldo's, the managers kind of took centre stage.
Anyway, Ancelotti out then, and do you want to just quickly explain for anyone who's been hasn't been following this why it was that after second place in the league last year and qualification for the last 16 this season, the club decided to boot him out?
Well, you don't go against the president. Which is one of the things that he did, even though their relationship remains amicable. The president went on the radio before the Salzburg game, said, boys, whatever the result, you're going to be staying at the training ground. You're not going to see your wives. You're not going to see your girlfriends. And Ancelotti took issue with that and came out and said he disapproved, which was the wrong move. He then decided to honour the president's word. The players didn't follow him. They mutinied. And I think we should clarify that they mutinied against the club, not against Carlo Ancelotti. There's been a lot of speculation about him losing the dressing room, a little bit like what happened at Bayern. That didn't happen. And Ancelotti's been very clear that when you don't win a game in 9 games and you've come out at the start of the season and said second's no longer enough, we have to be winning the title this year, and they're miles off, that a manager in that kind of situation is inevitably going to be up for discussion when it comes to whether he should stay or be fired, and right. He was fired.
They went for that option and have brought in Rino Gattuso, the growler, Ringio.
Yes.
Ancelotti, a lot of people linking him with Everton and Arsenal. Just in a word, see either of those happening?
His candidacy will be pitched to both clubs.
Okay. But, I mean, in lunch terms, you're not going to stick any meals on that happening.
I think Arsenal are looking for a different profile of manager. But of course, as we know, whether that manager becomes available or not remains to be seen. They'll obviously have to keep monitoring what happens with Freddie Ljungberg. If results don't get any better and deteriorate, then they might actually think, what are our options on the market?
Right.
And I don't think Carlo Ancelotti is by any means someone who's finished at the top of the game. Arsenal aren't at the top of the game anymore to begin with. But there's a lot of discussion about whether his tactics are out of date, whether his methods are old-fashioned. They're not. Yeah, our colleague Raphael Honigstein does point out, and he's right when he points this out, that the intensity at some of the training sessions and the sophistication of some of the training sessions at Bayern was not what Bayern players had come accustomed to under Pep Guardiola. But I think if you look at his tactics at Napoli, the way he sets that team up, it is very avant-garde. He is someone who's moved with the times, has been able to stay updated in a way that some of his peers have not. So I think he's still a relevant manager, and I think he can still do a very good job at the highest level of the game.
Right. Whether he'd be the man to kind of put the pieces back together at Arsenal is something that they'll be having a look at. And Rino Gattuso taking over. We'll discuss what kind of prospect Napoli are going to be under his tutelage, perhaps in next week's Tuesday edition of the Totally Football Show, when we'll be having a look at the draw, which is taking place Monday morning, of course. We'll have the Goal Show crew plus Alvaro Romeo with their reaction to who got who. Who do you like, though, Duncan, out of the last 16? Who do you fancy?
Liverpool, I know, the reigning champions, but they did very well. But, you know, that was quite a tricky fixture. In the first 20 minutes, they were under the cosh, and they handled it really well. And I think a few Liverpool fans have pointed out that, you know, Naby Keita's come in the last couple of games. They've kept 2 clean sheets. Their XG conceded is actually lower when he's in the team. So he's got this reputation of being, you know, maybe losing the ball a bit in midfield. But I think in terms of linking the defence and the attack, he's a really good player. And, you know, with all the games this month for them and with Fabinho's injury, I think it's going to be a big month for him.
Wonderful goal from Mo Salah, Emma, were you able to catch that?
Yes, I have seen that numerous times on social media over the last 24 hours or so. In fact, I read an article about it and someone has sat down and done the maths and the physics as such, just how difficult goal it was to score. Apparently he had something like 1.3 metres to aim at.
Really?
When you think how fast he was running,
yeah,
that is quite impressive.
With
on
his,
an,
with
on
his
an
wrong
angle
foot
of,
as well, no?
It's
yeah.
about the same as Luke Skywalker had in the first Death Star, isn't it, I think?
Right.
No, I think it genuinely is. An explosion heard across Europe.
Well, there was an explosion from Erling Haaland. Did you see this? Wonderful scene as the teenage goal prodigy of Red Bull Salzburg. So furious was he that he went across to the sideline, asked for a water bottle so that he could throw it on the ground in disgust.
Wow.
Somebody
Dramatic.
Throws the bottle, he just throws it straight down at the ground. Mm. Wonderful. But anyway, yeah, Liverpool going through. There were loads of goals from some of the other clubs who'd already gone through. Lyon, they've made their way through. Borussia Dortmund did as well. Inter crashed out in classic Inter fashion to the kind of Barcelona, baby Barcelona team. Anyone grabbing your eye from the top?
Just on the Inter note, I did enjoy Luke Shaw trolling Lukaku.
Oh, what did he say?
So I think when Lukaku went to Inter, he tweeted in October time, UCL with a smiley face because he was so pleased to be back in it. A little dig at United there. And let's not forget, I think him and Luke Shaw clashed a little since he... Was it he released something?
Yeah, he released
it was their pace stats or something,
yeah,
wasn't
Luke
it?
Luke Shaw's running
and
data.
Luke, yeah, and he was... let's say, in the lower reaches of that list. So those two, I'm not sure, like each other much anyway, but Luke Shaw saw this golden opportunity. Was it last night to tweet, "Welcome back"?
Ha! Well, of course, they could be meeting each other in the Europa League.
The draw
for which I assume will be on Monday as well. Highest scoring group stage ever. Did you see that, Duncan?
Did, yeah. 2-2. You guys were all over it as live as it happened. Yeah. It was emotional.
I'm not going to lie, we were pretty fired up about that. All right, well, you know what? There are a lot of stories. We'll touch on some more of them as this show progresses. But up next, I feel like we should get onto the Premier League weekend.
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, oh, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
This weekend, listener, Premier League drama as top takes on bottom in Liverpool Watford. Woof. Curiously, there's also, in the course of the weekend, second top v second bottom when Leicester take on Norwich. And Sunday, 4:30 is the time to tune in and watch Arsenal hosting Man City. Shall we start with that one? Emma, are you excited about Arsenal Man City?
Yes.
Did you see Arsenal getting that win as they did on Monday?
I did. It was bizarre, wasn't it?
Well,
I just found it a really weird turnaround. I mean, it all sort of started after Martinelli's goal. But if he hadn't have got that goal, I'm not sure it would have happened. Because did Lundberg do anything that tactical? Some might argue that Xhaka was slightly moved towards the left, which made a bit of a difference, but
I think it was Cresswell going off for West Ham, which basically changed the game.
Okay.
Until that point, Arsenal had I think two shots in the first sort of 50 minutes of the match, and yeah, like you said, I mean, it looked like they weren't going to get back into it at all.
No.
And then when you've got a front three as good as that front three are and were, they could score three goals pretty quickly, which is what they did. But I don't think it implies a new dawn for Arsenal.
All right. Is this correct, Duncan? The stat I've read that this was the first time that Arsenal have come from behind at halftime to win in an away game in 8 years.
It is, yeah. They've not been very good for a while.
Right. Okay. But this is a terrific result as they head into the game with Man City. Briefly, where does it leave West Ham? Some suggestion now that Pellegrini's last chance to save his job is going to be this weekend away at Saints, with Enzo Maresca possibly stepping up as an interim manager. Horncastle's laughing over there. But
yeah, I was reading this. Apparently, it was Enzo that effectively masterminded that win over Chelsea.
Right. So, this, as per Jacob Steinberg in The Guardian.
Yes. Mm. So whilst there's question marks over whether this could be Pellegrini's last game in charge, I'm just wondering how in charge he is at the moment anyway. Right. Rumours as well that the board at West Ham are now consulting the players with how they feel about the management situation.
Right.
And by all accounts, Mr. Enzo is very popular.
Is he?
With the players, yeah.
Okay, why were you tittering at that, James?
Well, no, I tried to interview Enzo a few weeks ago, before the Turin derby.
Right. A match that he's absolutely famous for.
Yeah, because he's not popular with Torino fans, because he scored a goal in that fixture and famously mimed being a bull, which is the symbol of Torino.
Right, but it's also the gesture that he
the
did
cornuto.
is about the worst one you can do.
Yeah.
Putting, you know, the two
and so
like
Torino then attempted to sign him later in his career.
That's
and
how upset they were.
There were protests, and it basically stopped it from happening.
Right.
So, great guy.
Nice. Well, Arsenal, buoyed by this 3-1 win, will be taking on a Man City side who ended their own rotten run of results with a 4-1 victory midweek in Zagreb. James, I know this was one of the games that you were keeping
they went
half
behind
an eye
to an incredible goal.
Mm.
I mean, I know that City haven't kept a clean sheet since the end of October, but I mean, there's little you can do about that strike.
Danny Olmo,
yeah, one of the stars of the under-21 European Championship in the summer. Spain won that, and again, you look at it. Just as we're getting reports after the end of the group stage of, for example, Liverpool perhaps going after Minamino at 7 million, you look at Olmo and you think, he's actually done very well in this Champions League. Still in Croatia, still in Zagreb. Doubt he will be for long, though, James.
Interesting. What did you make of Man City, Duncan, midweek? Gabriel Jesus with a hat trick.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was classic Jesus, you know, scoring away from home. That's all he does now. I mean, he'll go to Arsenal this weekend as the top scoring player in the Premier League who's only scored in away games.
What?
Yeah, this season. And we'll probably face the top scoring player who's only scored in home games, which is Alexandre Lacazette. So, I mean, we're all fans of home and away at one point, but I'm not sure Donald Fisher is going to be in attendance. But...
Yes,
that's niche content right there. All right. Which is a stronger streak? What's your feeling?
I would say, well, Lacazette's—he's very much. This has been the story of his entire Premier League career. I think,
right.
You know, 85% of his goals in the Premier League have come at home.
Right.
So, and I think obviously scoring away from home is theoretically harder. So, I would say it's more impressive for Jesus. But I mean, they'll both want to mix it up, I'm sure.
I'm sure they will. Arsenal, though, this is, if they were to get a result here against the City team, who in their last three visits to the Emirates in League and Cup have won three times with an aggregate score of 8-0, Emma. Mm. Do you see Freddie Ljungberg pulling something out of the hat here?
No. If City go and even draw this game, yeah, drop more points...
Yeah.
What is going to happen to Pep Guardiola? The man's going to combust.
I enjoyed Pep's look in midweek.
Yeah.
Very hip-hop.
Well, I think that's a good point in terms of what will happen, because who sat on the bench next to him? Mikel Arteta, who could be the new Arsenal manager, who could be the new City manager. So what's he going to do in the game? You know, he might be like, oh, boss, let's make a substitution that will make us lose, because that could help me. I don't know. I'm not casting aspersions on Mikel Arteta in any way.
Extraordinary. Conflict of interest, says Duncan Alexander. Brilliant. Well, that's going to be a game to watch. 4:30 Sunday afternoon. All sorts of storylines there. The weekend begins with a fearsome first game in charge for Watford's Nigel Pearson as he takes his Hornets up to Anfield.
They've done so well there.
Take on Liverpool. Now, Emma, the last new manager you had was Kike Sanchez Flores, and his first away game was what? Man City, wasn't it? How did that go?
Yeah, not so well.
8-0.
On a bright side, surely, though, it can't get any worse than that.
Do you think it's going to be one of those days?
It could be. Historically, it's not a very easy place for us to go. I remember very clearly a few years ago when we lost there 6-1.
Right.
I was listening to the game in my car, stopped at a service station. In the time it took me to get petrol and buy a Kit Kat, I'd come out. And we'd conceded another two goals.
Extraordinary.
Is this Watford's talent? Because that happens with, like, City as well.
Collapsing.
Just, you know, yeah.
See, this is the key. Since that 6-1 against Liverpool, I think there's been 2 5-0s and a 3-0.
Yes.
So I think this weekend, manager bounce would be 3-0, 2-0 defeat. I'd take a 2-0, yeah.
Wow.
Can I just come in on Monday's podcast when Mr. Michael Cox was saying that Pearson had no real impact on Leicester winning the title.
Right, yeah, no, please do. Michael, if you're listening.
No one can really explain why it happened,
yes,
but the last couple of months of that Leicester season, they were playing in the same way and at the same level as they did for the first half of the following season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Pearson wrestled James McArthur on the pitch. There was the Richard III angle.
Yeah. You're an ostrich.
And obviously, Richard III, War of the Roses, the Battle of Barnet, which was quite a key battle in the war, quite close to Watford.
Seriously, was there a Battle of Barnet?
Yeah. Didn't involve Martin Allen either, which was surprising. So, I mean, Watford fans can hang on to the fact that Pearson's kind of, Plantagenet connections could kick in pretty hard this
right.
time.
Right. Well, so, Emma, last time you were on here, you were being quite circumspect about the new manager, but I think you thought it was going to be Chris Hughton.
I knew you were going to say that. Did I say that once?
No,
James?
You didn't, but you didn't say it wasn't going to be, and that was kind of the inference I drew. Did you think it was going to be Chris Hughton?
No.
Is this an upgrade? Were you expecting this?
Hang on. Upgrade on
Is
Hughton.
Nigel Pearson a... Yeah.
Yes.
It is?
Yes.
You have to say that, don't you?
The man loves a dogfight.
Wow.
Literally.
In the Carpathians.
Literally.
Wild dogs in the Carpathians.
So,
but
he's got another one on his hands.
What was it, 7 wins in the last
7
9?
9.
Yeah.
In that season when everyone thought Leicester were going down.
That is the kind of form Watford are in need of right now.
Right.
They basically a massive kick up the arse, and this is the man that's going to give it to them, Jim.
And we've said it before, Watford's underlying numbers aren't that bad this season. They've been either the most wasteful finishers or the unluckiest finishers in the league. It will get better at some point. And Tommy Mooney, that would be good if he was back. Troy Deeney is now back. But get Tommy Mooney back.
Tommy Mooney under Nigel Pearson. That is something I would.
He scored the winner for you, didn't he, at Anfield in 99.
There so, we are.
Yeah, it's all
coming together.
Have you met Nigel yet?
No, okay. I'm told he's got a very, very firm handshake, though.
I imagine he would do. I'd be disappointed if it was in any way not firm.
No.
You've lost your last five away against Liverpool by an aggregate score of 20 goals conceded and one scored.
Could Liverpool get complacent here?
Oh, it's possible, isn't
it? With that lead, with the fact they qualify for the Champions League, they've got the Club World Cup coming up.
That's the question, isn't it?
I would like to point out, yes, it was only a few years ago that Watford did beat Liverpool 3-0. And that Watford side had Ben Watson and Alan Neil in it. So,
will they be in the
Avengers United?
Will they be possible?
Right, okay. As you say, though, fixture congestion, we're all aware of Liverpool's busy calendar. They've got the League Cup quarter final with Villa after this on Tuesday, and then their first fixture in the World Clubs Cup on the Wednesday. The team will have departed, I presume.
Well, they're having two teams.
Yeah. So there's going to be a lot of rotation. So there you go. Is Pearson going to get a lot of money to strengthen? You've got United at home, Sheffield United away, and then Villa at home after Anfield.
I imagine so. The main thing they need is a centre-half, really, in the window. But this is the argument all along. On paper, Watford's squad ain't so bad. I think it's just a case of, with a number of teams in the Premier League at the moment, they just need their heads bashing together a little bit, and a bit of confidence.
You need to do better, and you need one or two other teams to do a lot worse. We'll be looking shortly at some of the teams who you might be targeting in terms of overtaking. Right now, though, this. Hey, it's a second bottom too this weekend as Leicester, who are ready to pounce should Liverpool wobble be Watford, host the team immediately above the Hornets in the table, Norwich. Leicester won their last eight matches by an aggregate score of 25 goals to 3. That's pretty good. Vardy, consistently scoring. Eight games in a row. Who do you think is going to have the bigger scoreline this weekend? Leicester Norwich or Liverpool Watford?
Leicester Norwich.
Yeah?
Yeah. I just think Norwich will play a bit more of an open brand of football. Whereas, dare I say it, I don't think the damage is going to be too bad at Anfield.
All right.
I've put it out there.
Okay.
I mean, Duncan is an XG fetishist. You know, you've seen how Leicester have kind of overperformed their XG. Are you expecting them to regress here?
Not against Norwich, no. I mean, obviously, Jamie Vardy's on this run. He's now on eight games in a row. He scored. His own record is 11. Mm. It's going to be a big Christmas for the family of Jimmy Dunn. Do you remember him? Who got dug up, not literally, when Vardy beat Van Nistelrooy's Premier League record. I think Vardy is one of the reasons that Leicester do outperform their XG.
Right, that makes sense. Okay. Situation, by the way, down the bottom is Watford, 6 points from safety. Norwich, 2 points above them currently. Then you got Saints and Villa, 6 points above Watford. West Ham and Bournemouth, 7 points higher up. And Everton, 8. Everton, though, perhaps moving away from the danger zone. Bournemouth, who are only 1 point above the bottom three and are missing an entire first team and have lost their last five matches, will be visiting Chelsea. So that might be a team that Watford could have a look at overhauling. Chelsea, who looked a little bit shaky, as we mentioned, against Lille on Tuesday, but did get the win. Their form hasn't been wonderful of late. You'd fancy them for this game, though?
Although the one big team Bournemouth seem to be able to beat fairly regularly is Chelsea. Since they've come up to the Premier League, only Liverpool have beaten Chelsea at Stamford Bridge more than Bournemouth have. So there's an outside chance. You know, this is the point. Bournemouth have lost five games in a row. That seems to be the point when then they'll now win three in a row and magically be 12th again. You'd imagine Chelsea would win, but maybe not.
Maybe not.
I think if you're a Bournemouth fan at this point, you're probably looking at the table and just doing the simple maths that there are probably three teams that are worse than them. That's, for me, the only reason they're probably not going to be in trouble this season. There are three worse. But this injury problem is a huge problem. And most of those key players aren't going to be back until the new year. But then saying that, they've got a really critical period after the new year, six or seven games on the trot, Bournemouth, where they can put this right.
Right, they are fixtures on the way.
Yeah, but between now and Christmas, it's just going to be a case of trying to stay afloat without all these key players that they're missing.
I mean, Chelsea have only won two of their last six. I think you mentioned how jittery they kind of looked against Lille. let's not forget, it is still a very young team, and this is the first time, really, that a lot of them are going to be playing on this kind of regular basis throughout this kind of Christmas period. Might have to intervene in January.
Or maybe they've already had a little bit of defensive reinforcement this week with the return of Antonio Rudiger, a man who will add a little bit of presence, a little bit of personality to that jittery back line.
Yeah, and he loves nothing more than a raking ball from the back as well. He loves that diagonal as well. So it gives him another option. The diag, yeah. So I think adds another option, certainly for Chelsea. I've always rated Rudiger. I think he's got
the same birthday as me, which I always...
Oh, really?
Any footballer who's got the same birthday as you, you always keep
What birthday is that, Duncan?
March the 3rd.
March the 3rd. Mm. Villa, who are also in trouble, currently just goal difference above the bottom three, are at Sheffield United. Villa actually lost 5 of the last 8, so that's not good. First meeting in the top flight between these two clubs for 12 years, although they did have 2 great games in the Championship last season. 3-3 at Villa Park, and then a 4-1 win for the Blades in the equivalent fixture at Bramall Lane.
Sheffield United haven't won consecutive Premier League games since Grandstand was taken off air. So that's
They haven't won 2 games in a row in the Premier League?
Since Grandstand went off air.
When did Grandstand go off air?
At some point in the past, quite a long time ago. So it's been a while. Obviously, they haven't been in the Premier League for a while. But yeah, so maybe they'll win and maybe Grandstand will be back.
That would be amazing. We could hear this again.
Grandstand theme as dropped by Fatboy Slim at some point last year to some millennials. Although, let's be honest, millennials are older than people think.
Great bit of music. Anyway, now, that is Villa and a pretty full preview of their clash away at Bramall Lane against Sheffield United. Huge game in the relegation race as Saints and West Ham face each other. Saturday tea time. Southampton, who'd been on a terrible run of form at St Mary's, have actually won their last 2 at home. West Ham have only taken 4 points from the last 24, 3 of those in that apparently Enzo Maresco masterminded victory against Chelsea. All looking very sad for Pellegrini. Is this going to be quite a grim game, do you think?
Yes. Well, I think both teams will know that. It was a bit like the Southampton-Manchester United game last season when both teams knew that a defeat was pretty terminal for their manager.
Right.
I mean, a bit like Watford, Southampton can argue they're the unluckiest team in the Premier League, I would say. Danny Ings, in particular, has already scored in 5 games where he's then lost the match.
Is that bad luck?
Well, he's doing his bit. And, you know, Southampton have possibly the ultimate player for that was Matthew Letizia, the only player to score hat-tricks in defeats more than once in Premier League history. So they do sort of absorb bad luck down there.
I hate to burst the Southampton bubble.
Oh dear.
But you mentioned this bounce they've had.
Did I?
The 2 wins.
Oh yeah, that, yeah.
They're against Norwich and Watford.
Yes.
The 2 other not very good teams in the Premier League.
Right.
And there's going to be 3.
You were saying, Emma,
there's going to be 3 at the end of the season.
Right.
Could Southampton be the 3rd is all I'm going to say.
What are you saying? They are at the moment. Southampton, Norwich and Watford. As for West Ham, not sure if it inspires the players or otherwise to know that their manager might be gone if they lose this game, if he's not... Yeah, I mean, conjecture there. Really.
Well, I mean, it depends how he himself handles it, I suppose. I mean, Carlo Ancelotti knew that he was going to get replaced in midweek and was still able to oversee the biggest win that Napoli have ever had in the Champions League. So clearly West Ham are going to go to St Mary's and rock up and score 4 goals and win triumphantly. And Enzo Maresca will step over poor old Pellegrini and, you know, there you go.
Wow. We shall see.
Pellegrini, I imagine, will get another job somewhere.
China?
Well, yeah, he can always go back to China.
Yeah.
Just, you know. You doesn't look that Rafa Benitez will be coming back, though. I mean, he was a guest of Monday Night Football, a very good one as well. And he was very keen to point out how he wants to complete this project with Dalian Yifang. He's got, 2 years on his contract, so we'll have to see.
Well, okay. If it's football Sunday at 1:30 or after, you can't say fairer than Everton's trip to Man United. What a fixture this looks like being. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has, of course, in the past week, outwitted Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola. Now, boss level, can he beat Big Duncan?
Well, it's a DNA classico, isn't it? Because he's got United DNA. Duncan Ferguson is riddled with Everton DNA. And,
right.
I mean, what's going to happen?
Let's hear some of that Everton DNA in action.
Stretch for Hinchcliffe. Michael's lost it and Ferguson's gone again! He's cementing Manchester United!
Wow, the sweet sound there of Big Duncan scoring. 2 goals in 6 minutes at Old Trafford. Of course, he had a terrific record against United as a player. Everton actually won the last meeting of these two teams 4-0. That was at Goodison, admittedly, in April, but still.
And this was the lowest point of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's time in charge of Manchester United. It was very much a kind of, I don't like that. I don't want to see any more of that. Mm. And this will be the kind of reason for the clear out that we're going to effect at United in the summer, because they were completely outplayed throughout this 4-0 after an hour, I think. And not the Manchester United that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was talking about when he says, we are Manchester United. Not the one that he wanted to see.
Right, well, what we are Man United seems to be at the moment is a team that will have like 27% possession, as they did in the derby, but can hit teams on the break. Is this the kind of fixture that plays to their strengths then?
I don't know if it is. Like we've identified now that United are this team that are most effective on the counter and out of possession, essentially. But Everton's possession stats against Chelsea, I think they only had something like 30% of the ball.
Mm.
I don't know if I can see Everton being that side that's gonna do that and fall into United's hands tactically.
Both teams are going to want the other team to have the ball, so we could be in for a real treat of to me, to you.
Everton looking like an entirely different team after Duncan Ferguson's arrival. We mentioned on Monday the tackling stats that they put up, and all round the word intensity was used a very great deal.
Well, I think that's what you saw in both of these two teams' last games, the intensity of United in the Manchester derby and then of Everton. So it could be quite the duel if they bring the same energy to this.
Crikey,
it's a
or
big
not.
Dunk energy.
Yeah, maybe so. 3 goals in 3 for Richarlison, eh? Your old friend Richarlison, Emma.
Yes.
From the snake department.
Richarlison. Is it?
Well, Watford take these things seriously, don't they?
It is interesting that Big Dunk got a tune out of him because he's sort of Marco Silva's angel child.
Glad you went with angel child.
But perhaps he's finally going to be this centre forward that he wants to be, and Marco Silva was sort of grooming him into. I'm not sure.
All right. Perhaps so. Duncan, do you have any stats on one of the up-and-coming players from the Man United squad, Scott McTominay?
Well, it was notable. Jose Mourinho was very keen to point out how he had developed McTominay in his time at United. He's the fourth most fouled player in the Premier League this season, which is a thing. But if you look at the players above him, Jack Grealish, Wilf Sahar, James Maddison, they're very much kind of creative players. You can imagine how they get fouled quite a lot.
Right.
McTominay's more just...
Gets in the way a lot.
He's gone from a kind of slightly amusing manager's player of the season figure under Mourinho to probably one of the key players in the United team.
Right.
And they have improved since he's come back from injury. So, an abrasive Scotsman will appeal to both benches, I imagine.
Right, indeed so. Is there a metric that can evaluate how well Jesse Lingard's doing similarly for Man United? Because we all saw the joke about another month's gone by, he still hasn't scored or assisted.
Yeah, I feel partly responsible. Well, I say partly, I feel entirely responsible for that. Obviously, all of Lingard's assists and goals last season came in December.
Right.
Which is nice. But he hasn't recorded
since.
I mean, he came close against City.
Right. But he did play a very influential role.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, this is where... You know, you shouldn't really judge players purely on goals and assists. They do other things. So, you know, he's another player that when he plays well, United tend to play well. So, yeah, he does look like his form's improved a bit.
Okay.
So,
there is a stat that we can offer about Marcus Rashford, and that's 13 in his last 14 for United and England. His biggest ever goals tally for an entire season previously was 13. So, Rashford doing the business. All right. Do you care to call that game, Man United Everton, James?
United will win.
Big call from the man who told us that Atalanta would make the last 16.
Yeah.
Also coming up this weekend, a bunch of other games, including Tottenham's trip to Wolves. We'll get onto that after this. That Man United-Everton game, by the way, I said 1:30. It's not. It's 2 o'clock.
1:30 was the old Sunday kickoff time. They do shift around. I thought of this emotionally this week when Loic Remy scored, because he's possibly scored the best ever Premier League goal in a 4:10 kickoff.
Okay.
For QPR against Wigan a few years ago. Not a massive, you know, amount of people to try and beat, but look up the goal, it's good.
We had a great Loic Remy quiz question at BT yesterday, because he became one of 7 players to score for and against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge in the Champions League.
So 7 players have done it?
Yeah.
Can you name the other 6, Emma or Duncan? Or you, listener, do you fancy a pop of this? Loic Remy's done it.
Deco?
No. There's only one in the current squad.
Okay, you know what? We'll part that, and at the end of the show, we'll see if you can... you have a think, but while you're doing that, let's just have a quick chat about another game that's taking place at 2 o'clock on Sunday, and that is Wolves-Spurs. Spurs, of course, who midweek had that 3-1 defeat at their old friends Bayern Munich. Doesn't affect their place in the last 16, but maybe one or two little pointers there from Jose Mourinho, who made wholesale changes to his starting lineup, leaving out the likes of Dele Alli and Kane and Vertonghen and Aurier. Juan Sesenyol got his first start and scored a lovely goal. What about this fixture, though, at the weekend, which is clearly Mourinho's priority?
Tricky one, because Wolves have on the longest unbeaten run in the league after Liverpool. What is it, 11 games now?
Mm.
And very much a meeting of the kind of Mendes, kind of Jose, Nuno.
Would they be friends, the two Portuguese managers facing off?
It sounds like they get on. I think last time they met each other, Nuno was quite complimentary. He said that he taught him how to win, which Jose might regret ahead of this weekend.
Right. Oh, Jose said that he taught Nuno how to win.
No, Nuno said that Jose taught him how to win.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right, good for him.
I mean, there is a possibility of a slight crack in the Wolves' happiness with Raúl Jiménez semi-hinting this week that he wouldn't be averse to a move to another club, possibly back to Spain, or maybe to a bigger club in the Premier League. So maybe he's now in the shop window, as it said.
Mm.
And obviously Spurs will have had an extra day's rest and rested quite a lot of players,
right?
Although Wolves will have done similar. So, I mean, this feels like a kind of very much a kind of game with both teams could finish fourth. So, you know.
Well, they're currently sixth and seventh, separated by only 1 point. And Wolves lying 5 points, Spurs 6 points outside the top four. So, yeah, there's a lot riding on it from that point of view as we head towards the transfer window, which...
Well, and also as Spurs, after this game, they will head to... Or they play Chelsea as well.
Right.
So, quite a big doubleheader coming up.
Mm. Okay, it's the kind of fixture that Wolves have traditionally shone in. Of non-Big Six teams, they have the best record against Big Six opposition.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah, 21 points against Big Six teams since the start of last season. But they've not faced a rehabilitated, pumped-up Mo.
Right. They have what James Horncastle would term Big Six energy.
He would.
Yeah. It's a big game, that, for Spurs away at Molineux. Duncan, a final thought on that?
I think Spurs are going to win. I think they're
really.
Yeah, I think they're on a roll.
Crikey! I take the opposite view myself, but I guess we'll find out this weekend. Burnley are taking on Newcastle Saturday mid afternoon in another of those no you have the ball non possession derbies.
Yes, well, it involves Newcastle, and I think this is going to be the Sports Direct fixture of the weekend.
Right.
Because,
direct.
Yes. Yeah, Burnley 21.6%, Newcastle 19.7% of their passes have been long this season. So
right.
they like it in the channels.
Here's a stat, since we're doing them. Newcastle's average possession figure this season is 32.8. That's the lowest in the league. They're the only team that's never had this season more than 50% possession. Incredible.
But, and yet, in the last 6 games, only, what, Liverpool and Leicester have had a better record than them.
It's extraordinary. Third in the form table. Yeah, they've taken 13 points. Do you reckon they're going to take 3 points at Turf Moor?
Newcastle, yes. I actually think Burnley might be in a little bit of trouble, but they've kind of gone under the radar. 3 defeats on the bounce now. And yes, they beat Watford before that, but they were poor, very poor in the first half of that game. And they took literally the 3 chances that they had at Vicarage Road. Dyche has said he thinks their three defeats is just down to being punished when they've made mistakes. But like I said, they were doing the same at Watford. Watford just didn't have the ability to punish them that day. And I think Newcastle, even without Saint-Maximin, will.
Is he definitely out of this game then? Was it a hamstring issue?
Yeah, he's definitely out. Oh. It should be a straightforward switch with Atsu. I'm not sure.
They've got Jonjo Shelvey in terrific form. He scored 3-3, is it?
Mm. Yes. Right. The other thing to note in this game, the man in the middle, Tim Robinson, will be making his top flight debut as a referee. I have seen him hold the board up as the fourth official at Watford, which he did quite well. So,
Did he go for straight up or did he rotate?
Rotate.
Yeah,
I like the kind of rotate. Mm. Very much kind of old boxing kind of ring girl.
Right. Some unexpected detail, but much appreciated, Emma. Newcastle, if they win this, they could be fifth. That's right, fifth. Going into Sunday. Quite
that was the sort of thing that got Alan Pardew an 8-year contract. So here we go.
Indeed. Chris Wood update, Duncan?
He's still leading the building materials top scorers and looking good to dominate that sector for some time to come.
For the farmyard outhouses goals race, Ashley Barnes is sadly not of this. He's off games, isn't he, for this one?
Mm.
Yeah.
So gone back to Austria.
Not a good Barnes conversion rate.
Yeah, that's very nice, isn't it? Very nice. Anyway, there's one other game. It's coming up on Monday. Palace against Brighton. What kind of world, I wonder, are we going to be living in as that game takes place? But take place it will. And, of course, it's a huge match for supporters of both clubs because of the long and storied history between them.
The M23A23 Classico.
Right, okay.
As it's sometimes known. I mean, I think,
yes,
for me, the big thing is Wilf Zaha's on 22 Premier League assists as it stands. If he can reach 23 in the 23, I mean, ESPN have got 30 for 30. I'm all over the 23 and 23.
Right. Crystal Palace have been in great form, but it was Brighton who did the double over them in these fixtures last season. So it's going to be big, isn't it? Roy Hodgson update?
100th game for Palace.
Right.
Manager. So maybe they will reward their veteran manager with a win.
Okay, that's coming up on Monday. Very shortly on this Totally Football Show, we'll be having a look at some of your questions. And, we'll also have the answer to that puzzler suggested by Dave Ray, Statmeister Dave Ray, midweek, who was asking who are the seven players who have scored at Stamford Bridge in the Champions League for both Chelsea and for the visiting team. Quite a puzzler, that. Loic Remy is one of the seven, as we mentioned, but we'll have the rest after this. We'll also be answering some of your questions. Right now, though, it's time for some odds. Producer Ben has been speaking to Paddy Power. Hooray!
Yes, listeners, it's me, Producer Ben, and I'm here with Lee Price from Paddy Power. Wow, Lee, what a midweek we've had in the Champions League, and what a weekend we're going to have in the Premier League. Let's start with Liverpool, please. Can they get five or more against Watford at Anfield?
Well, they're 1-7 to win this game. Poor old Watford are 14-1 to get the 3 points here. Fair to say we don't fancy them. And can you blame us? Liverpool are 21-10 to score four or more times in this match, so we're not as confident as a goal fest as you are. But it is odds on that Jurgen Klopp's men score at least three times. As I said, poor old Watford.
A revitalised Everton are taking on Man United. What's Duncan Ferguson's lot going to do against Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's team?
Despite the much-fated Big Dunk effect, we make United the odds-on favourites here. It's 8-11 they win. Well, they are at home and they are in decent form, so long as you only judge form by their last two fixtures, of course. Everton, though, have an interim manager the whole world is so scared of that everyone's making jokes about how potentially violent he could be. Hilarious. The Toffees are 7-2 to win this. David Moyes is back to being favourite for the next manager. Now that is something to be angry about.
And finally, Lee, Newcastle and Steve Bruce are in outrageous form. Can they beat Burnley and keep this run going?
I think you've spotted a discrepancy in our betting, Benjamin. Do you mind if I call you Benjamin? Too late, done it now. Burnley are odds on to win this one, and I'm not sure how our traders are so confident about the Clarets. Then again, it was our Christmas party this week. We make Sean Dyche's men 10-11 favourites to win this game. Newcastle are weird, properly weird, and even at 3-1 it's hard to back them, I think. And yet they do pull out results at the minute. The draw, which is what I'm going to go for here, is 12-5.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply, and when the fun stops, stop. Got a question here from Swan Endu, who says, out of the Champions League teams going into Europa, who stands the best chance of winning it? Will Ajax and Inter, for example, be prioritising this tournament?
Lol. Antonio Conte prioritising a European tournament? No.
Particularly when they've got a Scudetto, maybe, on the way for the first time.
Precisely. That will be his focus. I think Ajax, they've been to the final before. Remember, they lost to Jose Mourinho's Manchester United at that time. Since then, they're a better team. And even though they've lost players, they're still a very savvy European side. Mm. So, yeah. I say Ajax. Why not?
Why not? Matt T asks, should a medium-sized, big city-based UK team, brackets, e.g. West Ham or Bolton, close brackets, adopt an Athletic Bilbao approach to only fielding locally born players to hoover up young talent by offering a quick route to the first team? Ooh, it's very much in keeping with the times, isn't it, that? Local players for local teams.
I mean, I think you could say, yeah, a London team. I mean, I would say probably the best team to do it would be Crystal Palace, because South London is probably the world's most renowned hotbed of talent, of young players now. So I think if Palace only chose South London-born footballers, they would do all right.
Brilliant. Duncan, in the interest of topicality, I know you've worked out who's the highest scoring Premier League player ever with the letters of election in his name. Who is it?
It's Laurent Koscielny, who decided to leave the country earlier this year.
Right. There you go. Now, I think it's time to reveal the answer, to ease those vexed brows when we identify the other six players alongside Loic Remy, who scored both for Chelsea and their opposition in a Champions League fixture at Stamford Bridge. Emma, have you got any of these?
Torres is my contribution.
He is on the list. Emma is correct.
Right. Five to go. Duncan, can you offer anything?
Everton legend Samuel Eto'o.
Yes, he is on the list too.
Very good. Four more to go.
I already mentioned one.
Oh, did you?
Well, off air, didn't I? And you said, James, keep it.
Well, yeah, but that was off air and now we're on air. I can't remember who it was also.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I'm trying to get your memory going.
Oh, right. David Luiz.
David Luiz is one as well.
Crikey. Three more to go, listener. Help us out here.
Well, as I said before.
Diego Costa.
Yes, Diego Costa is on there as well.
Two more.
There is one player who is in the Chelsea squad at the moment.
As we speak.
Did it for Shakhtar against...
Willian.
There you go.
And one name still to go. Could be here a while, listener. Hope you're not on the way anywhere important.
You've done quite well, though.
Yeah, one more
pacey.
To go. Give us a clue.
I think he specified that he wanted to be paid in euros.
Ooh, Michael Ballack.
There you go.
Michael Ballack. Never mind the Ballack. Here's the Euros. Right.
There you go.
Brilliant. Emma. Oh, you're going to be on the offside rule straight after this pod, aren't you?
I am, yes.
With Kate Borsay and Lindsay Hooper. What are you talking about?
Nigel Pearson, coincidentally.
Ah, yeah.
Yes, and memorable incidents at press conferences that we've been to.
All right, what's your contribution? What's your most memorable incident at a press conference?
You're going to have to listen to the offside rule, I'm afraid.
I'm not asking stealing their content.
I'm just a little teaser.
I'm afraid that has been ring fenced, yeah, for the offside rule.
Mocking content, stealing content. I mean.
Okay, then. Speaking of stealing content, do you know that Emma had a break-in in your vehicle this week?
I did, yeah.
What got taken, Emma? I'm awfully sorry about that.
Weirdly enough, my Watford jacket.
What kind of jacket was it?
2015, 2016.
But, I mean, was it like a
training coat? I leave it in the boot of my car just in case I break down because it's quite warm.
Because Watford used to have those, you know, they used to have really long ones. I remember Luther Blissett used to have one that went all the way down to his ankles, which is a long way.
No, this one is just cuts at your waist.
Okay.
At your waist, at your hips.
Yeah, oh, fair enough. What colour?
It's black with a Watford badge. I tell you what, though,
yes,
does make it unique. It says Hornets player on the back, which was specifically printed because I was presenting for Hornets player. So if you see anyone with that, also wearing an alpaca walking rosette.
I'm sorry, a what?
That's also gone missing.
A rosette depicting?
Yeah, I went alpaca walking about a month ago and left the rosette in my glove compartment.
What a heist this is.
And it was gone. Do you know what, though? It's yellow, which makes me think, is it some kind of Watford fan thief?
Imagine if Nigel Pearson walks out and...
alpaca walking rosette. So there we are. If anyone sees somebody walking around looking a bit shifty with those two items on, there you go.
Yeah. Crikey. All right, listeners. Keep an eye out for that. You're doing Five Live on Sunday night, aren't you?
I am. And the West London Derby on Saturday.
Brilliant.
Being Brentford against Fulham, just for clarification.
Yes.
Any QPR fans out there?
Right. Okay. Meantime, in the Totally Football Network, we've got David Priest is joining us on the Football League show, which is out at the moment, talking about Sunderland and goalkeeping. And he's going to be with us, I think, when's that? Next week? Next Thursday, when he'll be talking about probably Sunderland and goalkeeping. Before that, though, we've got two Totally shows, Monday and Tuesday. Monday, featuring very much Michael Cox, Daniel Story and Anton Tolui. Tuesday... James, you'll be joining me alongside Rafa, Jules and Alvaro when we'll be breaking down all the weekend action in Europe and especially Monday morning's Europa and Champions League draw. Brilliant. Looking forward to all of that. For now, that's it for this show. Many, many thanks, Emma, for making it in.
Thank you for having me.
Not at all. James Horncastle.
A pleasure, James.
And you, Duncan Alexander.
A biente.
Exactly. All right, then, listener. Have yourself a great weekend. Best of luck with everything happening. And we'll see you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.